Good morning.
Good
Morning.
morning, Graham. Good morning, Mel, and hopefully good morning, Leonie.
Good morning.
So nice to hear you all again, and thank you very much for your forbearance last week when I've been a little bit blattered and battered on the mend, certainly. That said, a seismic week politically. Are we looking at the end of the Gazan war, or are there smoking guns?
It'd be lovely to think that we were looking at the end of it, but I think it's pretty unlikely.
So already there have been some summary executions by Hamas, we're told, but also some random pot-shotting by the IDF at people just trying to find out where their front door is, which is for some, the eyes of some people, a crime. Presumably it's a question of how well these forces are regulated, isn't it? And the devil, hopefully not, but the devil, if it's going to be anywhere, is going to be in the detail. And whether we are going to look at a sort of a 40-year resurrection of a version of Pontins, or whether we're going to look at an organically informed free city. The hurdles are humongous, are they not? Qatar supposedly pivotal to this, notwithstanding the attempt to execute some of the Hamas negotiators recently.
Well, I suspect that's why Trump suddenly decided to actually put some pressure on Israel to come to the table was, he gets on rather well with the Qataris, and the attack actually in Qatar, I think, was a huge mistake by Netanyahu. So I think that's what forced their hand. I think the real problem is, if anything happens that the Israelis, think doesn't completely comply, like the return of hostages' bodies quickly, or quickly enough. Will they just use it as an excuse to restart the war or to stop the aid, which is what they've done at the moment, and any excuse? And well, they're taking pot shots all the time. Their behaviour in the West Bank is just unbelievable. The way that settlers behave. In the so-called settlers behave in the West Bank is just outrageous, and completely backed up by the IDF there, instead of being controlled in any size, shape, or form. So, there's lots of, I mean, and I don't think the devil is in the detail. I think the devil is in the lack of detail. This peace settlement is just 20 points. With no detail at all. So I think the whole thing is fraught.
Yeah, and Tony Blair, well, resurrected, I suppose, really. Mal, what do you make of his potential role in this? You had a lot of time for him as a statesman in his heyday. Oh, I think I might have to readmit him.
Have we lost Malcolm?
Temporarily, I think he's about to fight back. Mal, sorry about that. I thought I'd admitted you. Good morning. Is he there? Graham, would you like to start with Blair? I mean,
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary. Blair's Institute, the role he's playing. hopefully, he's learned a lot from Iraq and before, as well as
I sense the
Northern
tongue
Ireland.
being placed rather firmly in the cheek there. Yeah.
Yeah, but his linking up with Kushner and therefore Trump. Is pretty extraordinary. I think it's a new turn in world politics. They're obviously incredibly ambitious. They've announced it as world peace forever. So they're obviously very ambitious in making it stick.
Presumably, it's the messianic sort of evangelicals they're trying to get back on board here, isn't it? Blair has that touch of about of as Private Eye used to say, the vicar of not Dibley, but wherever it was.
Yeah, but I think they really do see it in those terms, and so hopefully Trump will force Israel to go along with it, and stop them complaining about They have actually announced that it's unreasonable to expect the Hamas to find the bodies under the rubble, if they're under the rubble. Take it, and then I think they've asked for specialized equipment to find the bodies.
The job is epic, isn't it? And grisly.
Well, exactly. I mean, presumably they didn't know that they didn't have access.
Except with a bucket, seaside bucket and spade, as it were.
Well, that's what their access is. So it's quite reasonable to ask for specialized equipment. So Trump has to come in and say, okay, Israel provide it, or
They might
Hamas
say, could it be used as a weapon? Has it got a
provide
homing device on it?
it.
No.
Well, they're all the problems, and the fighting between the Palestinians is horrendous.
Well, it's divide and rule at an early stage isn't always not a good ogre, is it? I think, Mal, good morning. Sorry about the access problems there. You have mixed feelings about Hamas at the best of times. I mean, we were just
No,
talking about Blair there.
I don't have any mixed feelings about Hamas whatsoever.
Perhaps we should be more blunt then. Do you see the current situation as sustainable, as modular in any way? We're told we're already at stage two, whatever that might mean.
Yeah, because I don't see the only ultimate goal. The only ultimate destination with this is reachable. The destination is to reach relations between Israel and, if you called it a new state, Palestine, which are the same as relations between Israel and Egypt, or Israel and Jordan, or Israel and Saudi Arabia, where it's pretty much normalized. Hamas has said the reason it launched the October the 7th attack was to stop the ongoing accord between Saudi and Israel, because they were about to announce a quite thoroughgoing accord, whereby Egypt and Jordan and other states, Saudi in this case, would just make it very clear that they fully accepted Israel's right to exist as a Jewish-led state, that they had no interest in attacking it. And to be fair, Jordan has been quite helpful to Israel in terms of stopping some of the Houthi bombs that have been launched on Israel over the last couple of years. And Hamas has no interest in that position. Hamas has made it very clear he doesn't want a two-state solution. He wants a one-state solution. There's enormous anger in the extreme Islamist world that there is a state where they can't get at the Jews. Everywhere else, we've seen in the UK now with the murder in Manchester. Increasingly, the extreme anti-Semites can get at the Jews because they're integrated through society. They can't get at them in Israel because they're protected. And what we saw, I think it's a huge mistake to draw too many parallels from things like South Africa and Northern Ireland. But one thing that was clear in in both of those cases was that those from the wings of the dispute, so de Klerk and Mandela in South Africa, McGuinness and Paisley in Northern Ireland, came to a view that they wanted to put peace before the ongoing dispute
Sectarian rumblings, as it were.
understandable hatreds within their communities for each other's community. And at that point, because they were the ones who had the credibility to stand up to the even further extremists, McGuinness was able to bring the IRA to the table, and Paisley the same with the UDF, although it's a different relationship, the Ulster Defence Force, which was the main terrorist organisation on the loyalist side. And between them, I think Tony Blair played an extraordinary role in that. I think Bill Clinton played an extraordinary role in that. John Major before that. Many others were involved, but at the end of the day, it worked because those two and the cadres that they represented were prepared to move forward with peace. I don't see anybody really on either side of the Middle Eastern dispute at the moment who is in that position. I think Israel would probably reach that position if it was confident that it could be reached. I don't think Israel has any interest in attacking its neighbours for the sake of doing it. It's always ultimately been to defend its own borders, and yeah,
You know, people
with last.
find it hard to tell the difference, I think, because it's such a perpetual situation. It seems almost Orwellian, this perpetual state of war, and war is peace, as it were.
Yeah, and it's yeah the devastation in parts of of Gaza are horrendous, and it's terribly, terribly sad. And if this does, of course, I hope that this will move forward, but we need to see the and Graham touched on it there. The Hamas are now coming out of the tunnels now the Israelis have withdrawn, and are massacring the wrong tribes. They have this protect. Pretense that they were working with Israel. Well, there's no evidence really for that. It's simply, firstly, to carry out genocide against the groups that they don't like in Palestine, many of whom have just as much right to be there as anybody else. And secondly, obviously, is terrorizing the whole population. So if we do get to a point where there's a Palestinian state, that Hamas would win the elections and would be able to. Continue, go back to building up a military force to try to destroy Israel. And while that pertains, it's hard to see how anything terribly sustainable can emerge. Now, I hope that's wrong, but there is something akin to denazification required here. I think the level to which the children in the population just are being trained. That Jews are not people and they should be eliminated and exterminated. That's not going to go away in a year or two. That's going to require a whole population to be won over to the idea that living in peace and flourishing as individual families is a better way forward than falling for this idea that your job in life is to martyr yourselves in killing Jews.
But equally, these kids being braced for apparently random attacks and a systematic erasure of their communities and indeed their parents. I'm wondering what perhaps conceivably is lacking here at the moment, notwithstanding the big hitters being involved, is any form of even proxy governance of this situation, whereby you have the ardent far rightness of the Israeli administration that is perhaps slowly going to have to come to terms with a different way of operating, and the sort of one trick pony that we've had hitherto, and a Palestinian government that, or indeed in the case of Libya, you have the evolution of several governments, up to six, I think, at any one time, and the potential for ongoing disarray as a result of that. How do you, as it were, form a team on the back foot in the short term? And Leonie, is this also a question of testosterone?
Well, Malcolm has, I think, pretty much agreed with what I was saying, which is that it's fraught and there are bad parties who are quite willing to derail what little this process is at any time. I don't think it's just about testosterone, although I'm sure there's plenty of that flying around. There also seems to be a huge amount of ego involved amongst certain parties, not least our.
The
Sadly,
Tangerine Man, yeah.
no, sadly, not Nobel Prize winning.
Ah, oh, poor lamb.
I know. I mean, it was. I mean, if. Hasn't broken down and peace has been brought to the Middle East by hook or by crook. And, at this point, we don't know that that's going to happen. But
Comforting phrase, isn't it? Yeah.
if that did happen. Then actually, he would definitely be worthy of a peace prize, whether the Nobel, I've got no idea, but I mean that would be an amazing, it would be an amazing achievement. However, as Malcolm was just describing, you do need to have people who are, willing to really do the hard yards of the work on
Competence occurs to me as as a
competence, but reaching out to the other parties. And yeah, I don't really see the right people around to make these things happen. The potential introduction of Tony Blair is interesting, incredibly controversial, But he obviously has been involved in the kind of detail before, so could be a good person, but at the same time, I suspect might be just too controversial with too many people for it to be an easy road to where we really need to be. It's a very difficult situation. She said, "Massive understatement of the year," and it is hard to see that there are people who really want to make peace on both sides. I'm not sure that Hamas really do, and I'm not sure that, well, Netanyahu is in this weird position that he's been sort of dragged around by these horrific extremists in his cabinet who've been propping him up. Because if they, and also if the war stops, are they going to need to have an election in Israel?
It has
Will,
been mooted, more than mooted, in which case he might well be toast and legally toast.
yeah, so he could lose his any kind of ability to cobble together a some sort of coalition in the Knesset. So he's had no interest in stopping the war, which I think a lot of people in Israel have become increasingly angry about, hence all the massive demonstrations. And of course, he's potentially not only facing losing his cobbled together majority in the Knesset, but also being prosecuted. So there were lots of reasons for him to not want peace, which is why it's interesting that finally Trump snapped and has kind of, moved it into this area. I don't know. Let's hope that the ceasefire can hold, and meanwhile, some heads can be banged together to try and, get people on a path to a lasting peace, is my sort of assessment of where we are at the moment.
Who's missing in the frame at the moment, do you think? Who could? I mean, the UN are, of course, UNRWA was debarred from working in Gaza until very recently. They're now back in, but there's no sign of them getting having any particular role at the moment. For example.
Well, I think we do need to see some, not UNRWA, because they're sort of,
Yeah, that's the aid
that's
side of things, of
the
course.
aid
Yeah.
side of things. Yeah, you need to have some sort of senior negotiators from the UN, from some representatives from the Arab League, some of the countries that surround Israel and Palestine, who've got the best interests of both at heart. It needs to start stepping up and being involved, yeah.
I wonder if we could shift along a little bit. One of the common denominators in two major stories this week, sorry, this wasn't billed for discussion, but let's see where we go, is Jonathan Pole, who was an aide to Blair, but also seems to have had perhaps a restraining role in these sort of the transfer of some information or putative transfer of information to China that led to a court case that MI that collapsed this earlier this week, did it not? MI5 not particularly happy about that. And I'm wondering, given the fact that, for example, in Gaza, the corporate governance and real estate is important in this, how the management of information has potentially disintegrated or blurred in recent years, and there's something in the nature of governance that is going to make this more likely to recur and compromise, well, peace processes in the wider sense, national security.
Well, cyber warfare has picked up a lot, and I think that's what is behind the current problem with China. But I think it's a pity that China's not involved in the Trump peace plan as well.
Interesting thought, because they have broken bread, haven't they, at various times?
Well, and of course, the most of the signatories are the oil-producing countries. So it is an energy war that's continuing. I mean, Israel wants Gaza's oil. So I think that's what's interesting about the way the coalition has come together, that it really is an attempt, one for Trump to take over the world, and secondly, to get an international dialogue going on world peace. So I think it's really a major contradiction evolving between what his aim is for world peace and his actions, which are obviously towards war.
Well, indeed, Hegseth is now a minister for war, isn't he? With his sort of blue bottle cardboard ray gun. Yeah.
Changing it to the ministry or the, to war rather than defense, and supporting Putin. It's going to be interesting what happens today with
Just
Trump.
Hungary,
Because it's Trump that's been holding back Zelensky from winning the war in Ukraine.
I'm withholding funds and so forth and imposing terms and conditions. I think Zelensky is there today, isn't he, in the White House again? Yeah.
To ask for long-range missiles, in a, to enable you to win.
Which in turn have attacked Russian oil installations, haven't they, and domestic supply.
Well, Putin's like Netanyahu. He's unstoppable, and Trump managed to stop Netanyahu. So it's a question now whether he can stop Putin by sending tomahawks to Zelensky and backing him. To win against him.
I suppose that there is the issue of the micturation in the hotel room, isn't there? So Putin has got one or two things on Trump that may I was going to say micturate, so moderate that discussion in a sense. But Mal, do you see these things as being as intimately connected as Graham is suggesting? Is there a ripple effect?
Sorry, I've come completely blank. Where are we? Give me one
We
word.
were, Graham was alluding to Zelensky at the White House today,
Yes,
and the fact
the,
that they, you know, it, I
I mean, I think
some
it's
people might
I
look for a double
mean,
whammy.
yeah, the, I don't know, Ukraine's, I think it's slightly strange to say that America has stopped Ukraine winning that war because, in effect, the way to do it would come very, very close to making it an overt Russia versus NATO clash. And who knows where that would go. And at the end
Well,
of the day, I think
the Lithuanians and so forth are working in that way, aren't they? Polish forces also.
yeah, I mean it's a the whole region is difficult. I don't know where Ukraine is going. Ukraine itself has made the most remarkable job of defending itself against Russia. But I don't know what victory could look like for either side, really. It's beyond credibility that we're going to see Crimea return to Ukraine, for example. And it may well be that Donbass and the eastern regions, which do have very large ethnic Russian populations, it's hard to see them just being restored to Ukraine in an orderly fashion. But equivalently, it's very difficult to see that Ukraine would accept. We accept those
Anything
terms.
less,
So,
yeah.
yeah, it's hard to see what's going in that case. I think this whole business is of China just smacks of politics. It smacks of it's hard to believe, given that previous government had really gone off China from the days of George Osborne and the golden age of relations with China. By its dying days, the Conservatives were pretty rude about China. And I'd find it just simply impossible to believe that this has been a miscommunication along the way with something as important
I wonder why that is,
as
because we've still
China.
got substantial investments over there, haven't we? And you know, just to abandon that would perhaps not be very wise.
Well, yeah, and I think the government, that is why I say no, I'm not necessarily criticizing the government for being political about China. It's been the fastest growing economy in the world for a long time. It's a major influence, and it has investments. A lot of investments here, just as we've got a lot of investments in China. But I don't know if we're good enough at defending ourselves from cyber warfare to be able to keep up with the innovations that the Chinese are seem to be coming up with on a pretty much daily basis. And I just don't know enough about cyber warfare and the technicalities of it, to know whether we will be in a position ultimately to defend ourselves. But I think the picture, the story from the government, which seems to be changing on a daily basis anyway, that this was all just a matter of a miscommunication somewhere along the way, it just doesn't ring true, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, people are saying it's a political climb down. I don't know if this is a viable comparison, Leonie, but I remember you having some cyber warfare problems at the London Assembly a little while ago, and I wonder what, as it were, the realpolitik and the détente was in terms of digging yourselves out of that. I mean, clearly you are a model of good governance in many, many, many ways, and influential with it. But there are several factors here who are sort of keeping the show on the road, aren't there?
I don't think it was quite cyber warfare. I think it was some, in the end, they discovered it was some, I don't know, 15-year-old boys in their bedroom in Walsall or Warrington or somewhere like that who attacked TfL, actually. And I don't think they even asked for anything. I don't think they even demanded money to unlock accounts or people's bank details were stolen or anything like that. They just seem to have made some sort of cyber attack, and then everything ended up in a complete mess, including the IT for the whole of the GLA, because TfL is that part of the GLA family that supplies the IT service to everybody else. So suddenly everything was all locked down, and we couldn't get onto the internet and all sorts of things. So it was all a complete mess for quite some time, and we haven't really completely recovered, because some of the things that TfL processes are still moving very slowly. They built up a backlog, for example, and Malcolm would know about this, of processing private hire vehicle drivers' license applications, and they still haven't completely sorted that. They had dealt with a lot of the backlog, and then it started to build up again, and they have really struggled to get back on top of dealing with sort of day-to-day things. But I don't think that's quite the same as a state sponsored actor trying to infiltrate and steal national secrets, a couple of kids in their bedrooms, bringing down TfL. It isn't quite the
Yeah,
same.
I take your point, but
But
it's
what I
almost the
would
fact that
say,
they could conceivably do it even on that scale that might imply that somebody more malign could do more damage.
well, I was going to say, what I would say is people don't understand the level of cyber activity that's going on, however, these days. Both state-sponsored activity, but also the amount of crime. I mean, we've just had a whole kerfuffle going on over the last few weeks over police station front counters and whether or not people can walk into a police station and report a crime or something else at a police station over the front counter. And the issue is that they are now much less used. Most people will pick up the phone
You're
and ring.
encouraged to, aren't you? On and you ring up, yes.
Yeah, people will ring 101 or people will report crime online now, much more likely. And what people don't understand is also the crime has also gone online. I mean, the amount of scams that are going on, criminal activity. I think they've estimated that 60% of all crime is now online crime. And whether it's those 15-year-old boys or whether it's Marks and Spencer's website, look what's just happened to Jaguar Land Rover. They've had to stop production for weeks and weeks and weeks. So whether it's sort of a larger attack with, a ransom demand, we're going to shut you down unless you pay us money. Or this more horrible one that's just happened, kiddo childcare services, and with the robbers threatening to release the details of children on the internet, and I
Oh, it's
think,
disgusting, isn't
and
it?
I think they did release 10 children's details, and then I think they actually backed off, and I don't know whether they were paid money. That is just the criminal end of it that's going on all the time, and people being scammed, whether they're catfished, I love you please send me money, or whether it's, you know, this happened to a friend of mine. Oh, you haven't renewed your TV license, honestly, and fell for that, and they took £3,000 out of his bank account or something. So whether it's that sort of thing, or whether it's the sort of the state-sponsored China trying to steal secrets from the national governments of other countries, it's going on the whole time. The amount of it is just completely not understood by most members of the public. It really is not. In this case, as far as I can figure out, I can't remember them, but they're both called Christopher. The Christopher in London was friendly with the Christopher who was working in China and didn't really know what his job was, and still thinks that he was not working for the Chinese government, and so was just sort of chit chatting with him and seemingly on an innocent basis. I've got no idea whether that is true, but you would have to go some way to prove that there was actually malign intent. And also, from the sound of it doesn't really sound as though very much of interest was that couldn't have been obtained in the public domain already was sort of passed from one to the other. So I do actually have a big query about the CBS deciding that they, in the first place, they should have had enough evidence to say, yes, we're going to proceed to court. And then when they decided they didn't have enough evidence, all these various pieces of correspondence between the second in command, Collins, were produced. That each one of which, whether they were produced at the time or more recently, were all caveated to a certain degree, because there is an element of realpolitik about this. Because even if China is doing things that we don't like, we have never cut all of our economic ties with China. And the amount of things, if you walk into a shop and look for the label that says made in China, and that tells you exactly why. You know, they might behave very badly towards whole groups of people who, you know, they enslave, or they go to Tibet, or, you know, generally behave quite badly towards, in terms of democracy, what they've done in Hong Kong, all of those things. But we've never cut all of our ties with China. And that's governments of all stripes. And so for Kemi Badenoch to jump up and down and say, blah, 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 is nonsense. Complete nonsense, because a government that she was part of ended up being pretty anti-China, but for most of the 14 years of the Conservative-led and then Conservative government, they were not anti-China, and in practice, they didn't sever any links.
Now, Christopher Tugendhat, who I think was he up against Badenoch for the leadership on at least the previous round,
I think his name's
talks about the fact, right,
Tom
Tom
Tugendhat.
Tugendhat, sorry, I was going to, the attack of the Christophers anyway, yeah, Tom Tugendhat, yeah, talking about the fact that, on the strength of the collapse of this case, the UK is no longer a democracy. Presumably it's about the flow of information and the lack of due process. I mean, that's a pretty high bar to challenge or indeed to proselytize. What I'm wondering if the over digitization of how we do governance, including how we do warfare these days with the push button drones or what have you, is actually affecting the way in which we negotiate and take decisions about various kinds of liabilities.
Well, yes, isn't it? It should. It's a potentially a tool that can help to ease the way with these. As with almost all technologies, it can be used for considerable benefit or for considerable detriment. But the and the other thing that really struck me over the last 2 or 3 weeks of watching videos online is just how credible and brilliant now is producing fake videos of people doing all sorts of things they've never done, And that's going to, I think that's going to make an enormous difference to our public and possibly
Well,
private.
we've seen parliamentary karaoke, but it gets worse, clearly, doesn't it?
Well, now I certainly can't tell the difference. But I'm watching something I know cannot be true because I know that the people involved would never behave in that way. But if I didn't know that, I would have, I would be completely and absolutely taken in. And of course, that can cut both ways. It can both, it can cut in the way of people being portrayed doing things they never did, but it can also be used by people who did something nasty, saying, "No, I never did that. It's all faked. It's all AI." And when we've talked sort of on and off for years on this program about what's happening to the concept of truth and how truth is, and I guess
Truth social,
Trump and Johnson were two examples of people who very successfully lied, even when everybody around them would know for sure. I think the one that reminded me that amused me most with Johnson was him standing in front of the media saying there are no cameras here. It had reached a point, but it goes to an absolutely further point when genuinely and absolutely you cannot any longer believe the evidence of your own eyes. There was a time when if you actually saw someone doing something, you'd at least be sure that you'd seen them doing it. You might misinterpret it or whatever, and they might not be telling the truth, but at least you'd know what you just you what it was that you just perceived. That's no longer the case. I increasingly, except obviously face-to-face meetings, but in terms of the media that we all increasingly depend upon, it is way past the kind of the traditional lies, as it were. This has moved into a whole new area of lying, and I don't know how we get out of it.
Graham, this has preoccupied you for some time. In fact, you've been shouting this from the rafters with gentility for a number of years. Do you think we've reached a fork in the road here with these current events in the light of the increased digitalization and fakery that goes with it?
Well, I think we've been at the fork of the road for years. And the AI bubble is one big concern. I mean, making fake news is one example of how AI can get it wrong intentionally. So I agree with Malcolm entirely. The whole issue is about truth, and that this is what has been taken away. It's much more difficult to tell what's true and what isn't anymore. And I think that's what's happening now is channels opening up, new ways of communicating, so you can be sure that you are getting the truth. And I think this is one of the values of an organization like the BBC. The credibility is almost unquestioned.
Well, I wonder about that these days. I think that might be part of the problem to some extent. But in principle, yes, I very much agree with you. The organizations like that. And if you look at what Trump is doing to NPR for similar purpose, with similar concerns of sort of manifests as it's happening.
Yeah, but that's the way AI is simply making the rich richer, is by lying more to people and fooling people. And so it's becoming a less and less definition between the criminals and the so-called legitimate rulers. And it does fit in with the whole model of collapse of civilizations. And that's what's interesting about the peace treaty, or the is that it is a new form of power exercise, and it is following Einstein Freud letter of what happens. If someone is against you, then you're going to look for the bigger person to link up with, and this is what's happening with the Middle East, and certainly with China linking up with Russia. But Trump is now pushing people towards China, Which is the reason we don't want to fall out with them, is because we don't want to fall out with China at this particular point. And that's the obvious mistake of the conservatives, is to attack Starmer from going ahead with a fairly small case against China.
Yeah,
And you don't want to poke the dragon.
indeed. Leonie, are you as concerned as Graham and Mel are about, well, particularly Graham's phrase, the collapse of civilization there? I mean, amongst other things, you have in real time seen Reform UK beat themselves up in the chamber, haven't you?
Beat themselves up. Very funny. I think I think the real problem in all of this is the guy who coined the phrase fake news, and has also unironically set up his own social media platform called Truth Social. Because
Well, yeah.
he is definitely a stranger to the truth, let's face it. I mean, this whole stuff that he's perpetrating internally at the moment, where he's sending the National Guard into selected democratically controlled areas, saying there's riots on the street, this town is burning down, we need to send in the National Guard. All complete tosh. But is becoming more and more autocratic. All the checks and balances in the American Constitution are being completely ignored. Yet another reason for us not to fall out. I mean, I think the government over the last sort of 14 months, 14, 15 months, has actually been assiduously trying to restore relationships with Europe, which were broken deliberately by the Conservatives, with an unreliable player in the White House, and unreliable is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence, with a poor relationship deliberately engineered in Europe, and now an attempt by Badenoch and Co. to fall out with China. Who would they like us to be friendly with, I have to ask? And it is ridiculous to suggest that we can sort out the British economy if we've fallen out with absolutely everybody around the world, because one of the ways to sort out economic growth is to sell things not just to each other, but to other people, and to not have a balance of trade deficit and things like that. And who are we supposed to be friendly with? In the mind of Kemi Badenoch, it's just who? I've got no idea. I mean, she's not very friendly with anybody, I suppose. But to sort of then expand that to the world stage just seems utterly foolish and ludicrous. So I think one of the things that's been exposed this week is possibly the end of days as far as Badenoch is concerned. I thought she did rather well with her. I didn't particularly agree with what she was saying, but I thought she did rather well at her conference, and with her speech including "Let's abolish stamp duty." But I think her behaviour this week has been mad, absolutely, really, really.
Jumping up and down on it might not be the best way of going about it, I suppose. Yeah.
Posturing just for short-term political gain, and everything that she's doing just seems to be posturing for short-term political gain, rather than thinking through the sort of our place in the world and what we need to be doing for the long-term future of the country, as opposed to the short-term benefit to the Conservative Party. So I've been disappointed again, and I guess I will live in constant disappointment, that national politicians should be moving beyond just doing things for short-term political gain, for their own party, because particularly if you're running the country. And I think the government isn't doing a bad job on that front, but some of the things that they need to do are not really happening fast enough, which is why they're not in a great place in the opinion polls. So, but they have to keep plugging away at doing these things because they're important things to do.
Would you be very cautiously optimistic, gentlemen, along the lines of what Leone is saying about where Starmer is and all this? I mean, he seems to play quite a deft hand in terms of the Middle East negotiations, for example. Sort of understated, but just there. Witkoff paying tribute to that the other day.
Well, I think he's got his communications set up very well through Tony Blair. That's a fairly new kind of arrangement. And I think Starmer's obviously more concerned with the international situation than the domestic by the looks of it, which is the reason why he's making so many mistakes. But they.
Leon is implying that he has to be because of the shambles it was left in previously in terms of international relations.
I agree entirely. I mean, he's got a lot to put together again that was broken by people like Farage, with members of his party being paid to ask questions in the European Parliament, by Russia.
Oh dear. That's do you see that unraveling now? I mean, Farage seems to have, is this the peak of embarrassment for the shameless Farage or
That's yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit unfair to say that, to say, reform members and reform activists are in the pay of the Russian. This one clearly was. But we've got to recognise there have been spy scandals right the way through British history, and they've not been uniquely associated with one party or another. I don't agree with Leonie on Badenoch. I think it seems to me that at the moment I think we may have said this before, that for most of my political life, left right has been an economic description, broadly
Gibbs's
speaking.
third
That
law.
those on the right tend towards believing that we should have small government, that taxes should be as low as possible while still protecting those who need it, and government should get off the back of industry. While broadly speaking, those on the left believe that government is a good force and government should be in there shaping the economy to deliver on social outcomes. More recently, left right has been far more a social term. You could almost say that those on the left of politics tend to be supportive of immigration, and those on the left tend not to be. That's a vast simplification, but I think there's something broadly in that. And reform, they're beginning to, I think, recognise the importance of getting the economy right. But up till now, reform have behaved more like a left-wing party in economic terms than a party of the right. They've been in favour of nationalisation. They've been in favour of very significant, almost Liz Truss-like approach to reducing massive taxed incomes by a huge raise of raise a huge way of raising the thresholds, for example. But beyond a few things, which probably would save money in the economy, not really costing it properly. And so we haven't got an economically reliably right of centre party. And of course, the Conservative record in government was the last Conservative government in record was pretty dismal in many respects, particularly the amount of money wasted on PPE and elsewhere during the COVID crisis. So Tories certainly have a credibility problem, but I think at least Badenoch is recognising that if there is a way back for the Conservatives, it's to rediscover themselves as an economically right of centre party, and to play down some of the right of centre issues, social issues that have been broadly colonised by reform in recent days. So I thought actually there was a sign there. Well, I don't think there is such a thing as a short-term conservative interest. I think the Conservatives are so dead in the water at the moment that nothing will help them in the short term. The only thing available to them is rebuilding some kind of long-term role for themselves. Now, whether they can do it or not, I think, is a big question. But I think my feeling was that just as I thought Starmer gave a good conference speech, and I thought Badenoch as well. I think both of the main party leaders came out of their conferences in a stronger position than they went in. But I just reflect for a moment on the seven by-elections that announced them, because they are utterly extraordinary. There's not a single one of them which is anything like the others. In Trafford, in Greater Manchester, the Conservatives took a seat from Labour. In Spelthorne, which is Staines, just outside London, the Greens lost a seat to the Lib Dems. In Surrey County, the Lib Dems won one seat from the Conservatives and another from the
Gove territory
Independents.
as well as
In Bayborough, which is just all around Ipswich, the Lib Dems lost a seat to Reform. Now, I think that's the first time that that's happened, as far as I can see, In Preston, Labour lost to the Lib Dem, and in Ayr, the Scots Nationalists lost to an independent. So we've got seven by-elections, all of which have shown, all of which are different in terms of the incumbent and the ones that won. What there doesn't seem to be, though, in any of them, if you look at it, Labour have lost well over half of the by-elections they've been defending recently and hardly picked up any at all. The Tories aren't much better off. They haven't had quite such a level of attrition since then. Reform are the massive winners through all this. This group of seats was not those that you would regard as being Reform territory, and yet they still, you know, managed to pick up a rural seat in Ipswich from the Lib Dems, which is interesting. But there's no sign, despite these rather good performances by the Labour and Tory leaders at their conferences, that it's in any sense reflecting back in the polls. There's actually a poll out this week, it's an outlier, but it has Labour on 15%, the same level as the Greens, with the Tories on 17%. So that poll puts our two major parties as having less than a third of the vote between them. These are the most extraordinary times.
A time, I suppose, where the weather vanes do their thing. In conclusion, for now, Graham and Leonie, do you worry about the future of the Labour Party and the future of democracy with the splintering that that Mal is referring to? This is one set of by-election results, but are people feeling a little bit, I don't know, almost schizoid about the lack of relationship between the optics and the promise and the delivery.
Oh, I think there's a lot of I think there's going to be a lot of interest in what happens in Wales, particularly. And I also think in Scotland, where this time last year, I think Anas Sarwar was becoming quite hopeful that the Scottish Labour might do reasonably well in the elections next May for the Scottish Parliament. And that's, you know, because of this fracturing. You know, all these different parties all sort of round about 20%, 20%, 20%, and then Reform, you know, beyond them 30 plus. I think there's now widespread concern about, I mean, apparently there have been several polls in Wales that have put Reform and Plaid both ahead of Labour, so Labour trailing third, which would be a political earthquake as well, because I think Labour has always run Wales, or at least for about 100 years. You know, it's that would
So
be,
much of Labour's heritage tied up with Nye Bevan and et al, isn't it?
yeah. So, yeah, I know. I think there is concern about where people. So, listening to MPs talking about, oh, we're going to rebuild ourselves by the next general election. I think there's a lot of other Labour members who are not seeing it as something where, you know, we have until 2029. They're somewhat have a, you know, and of course there's elections in London for every single London borough next May as well, and across the country. So lots of other people slightly have a shorter timescale of what they're interested in, and I think that could make a difference for both Badenoch and for Starmer, depending on how badly the Conservatives and Labour do in those elections, if they do badly.
Graham, final word for now.
Well, I think Starmer is playing the long game. He's got his strategy that he's doing all the unpleasant things at the beginning of his reign, if you like, and hoping that they're going to have enough time to see the benefit, which will then bring back the voters. And I don't think he should be too worried about Farage. Hopefully, he doesn't respond in a panic, because I think, as I said last time, once Reform get into power locally, then they show how they can't manage the government, and go out of favour again. It's a very dangerous game to play, of course, but I think that's what happened before with the National Front, and he is going. He's got socialist. The fact that he's got socialist policies does tend to indicate that he's
As he
going to
describes them. Yeah. Yeah.
national socialism, which is, of course, the Nazi party.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, well, let's have a series of smoking guns, and thank you so much for your eloquence. Have a great weekend. See you next time.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.